Saturday Night Theater.
Hello, hello, stop your little games.
The Brighton Trade by T.D. Webster.
It isn't the girl I saw you with at Brighton. Ho, ho, who's your lady friend?
Mr. Fenton? Mr. Fenton?
Huh? Huh? Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. I must have dropped off. Ah. I know you, don't I? Jimmy Marsden.
You nicked me in 68.
That's right. What was it? Breaking and entering?
Yeah. And you had me in on the Melford break-in.
I had everybody in on the Melford break-in.
You had me in a time or two, but just nicked me the once.
Yes. Well, you just looked in to have a chat about old times, have you, Jimmy?
No, it's business. I'd heard you'd left the force and set up on your own. It took some finding.
Right, now you've found me. What is it?
Well, it's a bit awkward, really.
Jimmy, if it's anything to do with your old line of business, I don't want to know. You go down to the Nick and tell them.
No, it's nothing like that. I'm straight now. I have been since I came out 4 years back. I've got my own business. Do-it-yourself shop in Martin Street. Now, what I've come about is personal. That's why I said it was a bit awkward.
What is it? Your wife?
How do you know that?
I'm psychic.
I don't know, really. That's the trouble. I mean, it could be nothing.
Right, let's hear it. Wife's name?
Lynn.
Lynn. What happened to, Molly?
Maggie. Yeah. She divorced me in 69 while I was inside. I married Lynn just under 2 years ago.
What do you think she's up to?
Well, the usual, I suppose. Like I said, it could be nothing. But there's something wrong.
All right, let's hear it.
Well, the other week, I took a car into the garage. She's got her own car. I bought it for her as a wedding present. I was taking it in for a service. Now, exactly 12,000 miles on the clock, right?
Right.
I look at the clock a week later, there's another 300 miles on.
You always check on our mileage, do you, Jimmy?
No, I just happened to notice, that's all. I mean, I had to watch Maggie like a bloody hawk, but not Lynn. And it keeps nagging away at me, 300 miles. Now, look, there's no way she can have clocked that much. According to her, she hadn't been out of town.
You asked her about the mileage?
Well, not directly. But the only person she drives any distance to see is her sister in Croydon. And she ain't been there for ages.
Does she work?
Well, helps me out in the shop occasionally, that's all. I mean, she just uses the car for nipping to see friends and shopping. Normally, she's pushed the clock up 100 miles a week.
Could she go out during the day without your knowing?
Yeah, no trouble. I'm at the shop.
What about evenings?
Well, I'm out working one or two nights
working?
A week.
Working? Doing what?
Odd jobs. I put in fitted wardrobes, stuff like that. Look, I'm a skilled tradesman, Mr. Fenton. Learned it in the nick.
You're a credit to the system, Jimmy.
Well, it isn't me you should be asking about.
No, sorry. Force of habit. So, let's see. Any particular friends you might have gone out for the day with? You know, gone shopping to London, perhaps?
Well, to Sylvia. I mean, they go out together sometimes for a drink, but Lynn would have said.
A few extra miles on the clock. Not much to go on.
Well, it isn't only that. She's been very edgy lately, as if there's something on her mind. You see, normally we get on great. No rows, nothing like that.
Well, if you get on so well, can't you just ask her where she's been?
No, I couldn't do that. You see, like I say, we get on great. Now, asking her could mess things up. That's why I came to you.
It sounds as if you want me to prove there's nothing in it, Jimmy.
I suppose that's it, yeah.
But what if there is something?
Well, I know where I am then, don't I? I mean, at least I could try and sort something out. Try and see what's gone wrong. Did you ever meet Maggie?
Yeah, once or twice.
Right bloody cow she was. Fancy anything in trousers. And not only when I was inside as well. I mean, it was a right bleeding mess. But like I said, with Lynn, it's different. If there is something wrong, I want to put things right. Or have a go, anyway.
You got no children, Jimmy?
No. Bit late in life to start a family.
Right. What do you want me to do?
Find out what she's up to.
Yeah, I gathered that. Do you want me to watch her all the time you're out? It's going to run expensive if you do, you know. 12 quid a day, plus expenses.
Well, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, the next time you know or suspect She's going out on her own. You give me a ring, and I'll try to see what she's up to, if anything.
She mentioned something about going to see her sister on Thursday night. But I'm working.
Well, you can check that out yourself by giving her sister a ring.
She isn't on the phone. Now, look, do you want this job?
I'm easy.
Yeah, you can't say business is brisk, can you?
I can say what I bloody well like. You try somewhere else if you don't like it here.
No. No, I want you to do it. You know what you're about.
Thanks. Right. You better give me some details. What's the car?
A white Mini. I wrote the registration down somewhere. Uh-huh. Oh, here it is. And I brought a photo of Lynn.
Same again, please. Yeah, have one yourself.
Thank you, sir. I'll have a half later, if that's all right. Ice?
No, just water, please. Well, that's it. Thank you.
Sir.
You don't happen to know the chap in the corner, do you?
The one with the lady, sir?
Yes. See, the thing is this. He's the spit image of someone I knew in the RAF. Ian Booth. I believe he lived out this way. Why, I could be wrong, of course. I don't want to go across and make a fool of myself, especially if he's with a lady.
He comes in here quite often. I'm pretty certain his name isn't Ian. Hang on, I'll see if Doris knows.
Oh, yes, thanks very much.
Doris? No, it isn't your man, sir.
Huh?
His name's Vincent Crane. He has a hairdressing business somewhere in town.
I could have sworn it was Ian. Still, they say everyone has a double, don't they? Now, what have you got in the way of sandwiches?
Brighton?
That's right. They met in a pub on the Lewis Road. He's got a hairdressing shop near the railway station and lives in the flat above. Vincent Crane. You never come across him?
Not likely to, am I?
Well, as often as not, it's somebody known to the husband. Usually a friend.
Well, I don't know anybody in Brighton. Explains the minus, though, doesn't it? Just about works out.
Mm.
Young, is he?
Ooh, late or mid-30s. Tall, light-haired, flashy dresser, single.
Good-looking?
Not particularly.
I mean, Lynn's all right, but she's no beauty.
There is one thing.
What's that?
It could be nearing an end. They both seem very offhand. Never saw either of them smile.
Why would Lynn drive down there if they're packing it in?
Well, perhaps she's keener than he is.
Did she look keen?
Well, neither of them looked very excited. And she didn't go back to his place.
She's lied to me, though, hasn't she? I mean, for all I know, she could have been seeing him for months.
Of course, it may not be sex. There may be another reason she's seeing him.
Like what?
He could be just a friend.
Oh, come off it. Why hasn't she told me, then? She says nothing to me. She lies, in fact, and then goes to see him on the sly. Now, what does it look like?
Oh, you know, he could be some relation she doesn't want you to know about.
You think I can afford to be fussy about her relations? Oh, Mr. Fenton, you and me, we've both kicked about a bit. We know what it is.
Well, what are you going to do?
I don't know. I mean, I've never looked at another bird. Not once. And I've had chances.
Look, Jimmy, why don't you let it ride for a while, hmm? If there's anything between Lynn and this man, it could well be over.
But I know now, don't I?
Well, that doesn't mean to say you've got to do something. Just don't go knocking her about.
That's not my style, never was. You should know that. Though I wouldn't mind getting him alone in the back alley.
Jimmy, just take it easy.
I've never had any luck with women. Been let down all along the bleeding line. This time, I thought I'd got it all settled. Going straight, nice house, steady business. Although sometimes, just once or twice, I got the feeling Lynn was, I don't know, a bit disappointed.
Disappointed? How?
Well, when I first met her, I made a bit of a show. Spent money. Took her out, you know. I suppose she expected it to be like that all the time. Perhaps she didn't realise the money and the time I had to spend on the business. I feel bloody sickened. I do straight.
Jimmy, do you want my advice?
Yes.
Well, do nothing. Say nothing. Just sit back, see how it goes.
Easier said than done. But I'll try.
Yeah. You can always give me a ring if you want to take it any further.
Slow down.
What is it?
There, amongst the trees. The white Mini. It was there when we came past yesterday evening at 9.
An all-night job.
Not in a Mini this time of year. Pull in. I'll have a walk over. Where's the torch?
Here. You're all getting voyeuristic tendencies, you know that.
Must have caught it off you.
Everything all right, madam? Madam? Excuse me. Bloody hell.
What's wrong?
There's a woman in there. Looks to me as if she's dead. Cold as ice. Get onto HQ. Ambulance and a doctor. I'll get back over there, although I think she's gone.
Well, get the car registration.
Right.
Whiskey 5 calling Mike 1. Whiskey 5 calling Mike 1.
Police Constable Buckley, sir. She's over there in the white mini.
Did you find the body?
No, sir. PC Cartwright. He's over there with the doctor.
The doctor's already here?
Yes, sir. He's been here about 5 minutes. He lives locally.
Why the hell did you let him take his car up there? You realise he may have obliterated other car tracks?
We wanted him over there quickly, sir.
Good morning. Paul Brook.
And Chief Inspector Wilmot. Any ideas, Doctor?
Strangled.
Manual?
It doesn't look like it. A scarf or a tie, something like that. Here, have the torch.
Thanks. Any signs of a sexual assault?
No, it doesn't look like it.
Any views on time of death?
Difficult. Rigor mortis well underway. I'd say she's been dead 4 hours at least. That's very approximate. The pathologist should be able to place it when you get her back. Right. I'm off to my bed. Unless you want me for anything else.
Not just now. I'll be in touch.
The ambulance came. Then they had an emergency call. I told them to go. I thought you wouldn't want the body moving yet.
No. We shan't be moving her for some time yet. Thank you, Doctor.
Good morning.
Good morning. Cartwright?
Sir?
How was she sitting?
More or less as she is now, sir. Except her head was slumped forward on the wheel.
What time did you find her?
0117, sir. We'd noticed the car parked here about 4 hours earlier.
Any other cars parked here?
We didn't see any, sir.
Any identification?
Yes, sir. Her handbag is in the car. Mrs. Lynn Marsden, 7 Larch Avenue, Copley Heath. And the car is hers. There's a logbook in the glove compartment.
Marsden?
It's Jimmy Marsden's wife, sir. He's known to us. Edgar Fenton nicked him some years back. He's got a shop on Martin Street.
A short, stoutish build. Moustache?
That's him, sir.
We'd better have him in. Get on the radio and tell somebody to fetch him.
To the station, sir?
Yes. No, wait. Tell them to bring him here. He may as well identify her first. And when you've spoken to HQ, stay over by the road and keep the others from driving over here.
Right, sir.
Mr. Marsden?
Yes. Look, what's happening?
My name is Wilmot. Chief Inspector Wilmot.
And what's going on, Inspector? He'll tell me nothing.
Is that your wife's car, Mr. Marsden?
Well, it looks like it, yeah. Yes, it is. Somebody nicked it.
Stay here, please.
Look, what is it? What's wrong?
We found the body of a woman in the car, Mr. Marsden. The handbag beside the body contains your wife's personal belongings.
Oh, Christ.
We need to know who it is, Mr. Marsden.
Oh, bloody hell.
It may not be your wife, but we have to know as soon as possible. I can't insist that you identify the body here and now, but it has to be done, sooner or later.
Who else could it be?
We can't assume anything until you've seen the body, Mr. Marsden. It would just take a few seconds, and you have to be sure, don't you?
Yes.
Come on, then. I shall open the door, and we'll shine a torch inside. You say yes or no, right? Say when you're ready.
Okay. Yes. That's Lynn. Look, can't this wait till morning?
It is morning, Jimmy.
I'm in no fit state to answer any questions. Not after seeing her like that.
Look, questions have to be asked. You want to put yourself in the clear, don't you?
I've said most of it once.
Only in bits and pieces, and you were upset. Look, I'll get through it as quickly as I can, but we've got to get something down. No more than 5 minutes, right?
All right.
Good. Now, when did you last see your wife?
About 7 last night, just before I went out.
She was at home?
Yes.
Did she say she might be going out?
No, nothing.
You assumed she was staying in then?
Yes.
And you went out. But where to?
I delivered a wardrobe unit and stayed to fit it.
Name and address?
Watson, 47 London Road. I got there about 7:15 and stayed till about 9.
And after that?
I went straight to the White Hart. I was there till closing time. You can ask Ken, the landlord.
And after the pub closed, you went straight home?
Yes. Got in about 10:10.
And your wife wasn't in?
No.
But where do you think she was?
Well, I thought she'd nipped out to see a friend. Her car had gone.
You weren't worried?
Well, no, it wasn't all that late. I thought I'd have something to eat and then ring round her friends if she wasn't back.
Did you ring anyone?
No. I had something to eat and then sat in the chair watching telly. I must have dropped off. The next thing I knew, your bloke was ringing the bell.
You often fall asleep like that.
Well, I've done it before. I'd had a long day, a few drinks.
You've no idea where your wife went or who she might have seen?
No.
You never suspected her of seeing another man?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, well, it had to be asked, Jimmy.
Right. Look, can I go now?
Yeah, soon. Look, make yourself comfortable. I'll send you a cup of coffee, you know?
Nobody has any doubts at all?
No, sir. Mr. Watson was actually in the room with Marsden most of the time he was working there. And the landlord at the White Hart confirms Marsden was there until 11 at least.
What about Marsden's neighbours?
Nobody saw or heard anything, sir.
Hmm. We'll start on the rest of the road tomorrow. Somebody must have seen her going out, or him coming back.
It's a busy road, sir. A lot of traffic.
That'll do for now, Buckley. You'd better not go out again yet. I may want you to drive Marsden home.
Right, sir.
You've spoken to Marsden, Sergeant. What do you think?
Well, he looks genuinely shattered to me. And if the time of death is anywhere near accurate, he's got to be in the clear. Even allowing for a wide margin of error.
Oh, it's certain she died before 10.
Mm.
Probably earlier. I've been looking through Marsden's record. There's no violence of any kind.
Oh, I think he's been going straight ever since he came out the last time.
Yeah. He must have had a fair amount of cash to come out to. He set up the business.
Probably for keeping his mouth shut on the Melford job. Or his share that someone kept for him.
What about associates? Anybody with violence?
No. And as far as we know, no contact for years. He says he came down here to get away from his cronies in the East End.
I don't like the bit about falling asleep in the chair.
Oh, I don't know, sir. Do it myself, often.
Even when your wife is missing. We shall have to get round her friends tomorrow. It's got to be another man. Marsden said nothing about someone else.
Well, if there is, I don't think he knows, sir.
Well, let's hope that somebody does. And I was hoping to wrap this one up before breakfast.
You are a stupid bloody idiot. You know that? Look, Mr. Fenton, I had nothing to do with it. I swear it.
Then why didn't you tell him about the bloke Lynn met in Brighton?
I was confused and tired. And if they know about him, what does it look like for me? The motive's there, isn't it?
Hmm. Did nobody say anything about the time of death?
Not to me, they haven't. Look, after 11, I can't account for my movements.
But the other bloke, Vincent Crane, he could be involved, don't you see that?
And so could I. I've got form. He probably hasn't. They were leaning on me heavily enough last night. What are they going to be like now if you tell them?
What do you mean, if? I've got to tell them. Or you have.
Look, only us two know about Crane. Now, if we both kept quiet...
Oh, talk sense.
You've finished with the CID now. And from what I hear, you don't owe them any favours.
You mind your own damn business. You just keep talking the way you are. I just start thinking you know a lot more than you're saying.
I've told you, I know nothing.
You really think I'm going to stick my neck out for you? Come on. You can drive me there.
Oh, Christ.
Look, Jimmy, you can wait in the car while I go in and explain. Do you want to ring a lawyer?
I've done nothing.
Well, then you're all right, aren't you? Come on.
Hello, Edgar.
Morning, Jack. Hey, you all right?
Oh, fine, thanks. You're looking well.
Clean living, regular hours. Who's looking after the Lynn Marsden murder?
How do you know about that?
Oh, I've got my methods, Jack. Who is it?
Wilmot.
Wilmot. That's all I need. Where's Malcolm? This is just up his street.
Oh, he's away on a course.
Right, I suppose I'd better see Wilmot. That'll just about make my day.
And his as well, I should think. Hang on. Edgar Fenton to see you, sir. The Marsden case. Yes. Right, sir. He'll see you straight away, Edgar.
Well,
roommate.
Yeah, I know the way. See you, Jack.
Yeah.
He seems to know his way about.
He was a detective sergeant with the CID before your time.
Fenton, is it?
That's right.
Doesn't think much of our leader, does he?
There are times when you say too much for your own good.
It's common knowledge.
What is?
Fenton had a bust-up with Wilmot over questioning a suspect and got pushed into resigning.
Edgar packed in of his own free will. He'd done 25 years
and
in
there
the
was
force.
Some talk about him getting carpeted for having it off with a WPC.
If you keep your ears open outside the nick as much as you seem to have done inside, you might. I say might make half as good a copper as Edgar.
Oh, I heard he was pretty good.
Too fond of going his own way. And he trod on too many toes to get far.
He's living in a room at the back of his office in Commercial Street.
How do you know that?
Mike looked in there the other night. He saw a light on. Fenton was lying in bed watching telly.
Oh, sounds as if Edgar's got his troubles. Mind you, that's nothing new.
Probably 34, 35, perhaps older. 5'10 or 11, slimmish build, clear complexion, light hair, longish but well-groomed.
You're sure about the name?
Yeah, Vincent Crane. That's what the barman said. He is in the phone book.
If Marsden had told us this last night, we could have got straight on to Crane.
Well, he was in a cold sweat. It's understandable, don't you think? You'll find Crane easily enough.
Yes, I suppose so.
There's something else that might be relevant.
Yes?
I got the impression that Lynn Marsden and Crane weren't on the best of terms.
Were they arguing?
No, but they were serious, businesslike.
You think the affair was coming to an end?
Well, they weren't in the first flush of enthusiasm.
Hmm. You've had quite a lot of contact with Marsden. Do you think he's likely to have taken things into his own hands?
Yeah, I doubt it. It's not his style. It's almost a week since I told him about Lynn and Crane. He's had time to plan things better than this. And surely he must have been cleared by the time of death.
That isn't established yet.
Oh, and you let him go last night?
There's nothing to rule out an accomplice.
Ah, Jimmy doesn't have the contacts or the money to get anyone seen off. He was a small-time villain, not the Mafia.
We'd better have him in.
He's outside in the car.
Well, you might have said that sooner.
I promised I'd come in and explain first. If I hadn't, he'd have probably cleared off. Now, just you go steady with him. The bloke has lost his wife, you know.
I do know that. Sergeant Thomas, Jimmy Marsden is waiting in a car in the car park. Fetch him here, will you? Well, thank you for coming forward, Edgar. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I could hardly have kept quiet.
No. How's business?
Oh, very, very steady.
Chiefly divorced?
Chiefly.
Enjoying being on your own?
It's nice to be my own boss.
Yes. How's the family?
Oh, well, Ruth's just started teaching in Birmingham, and Neil's in the Far East in oil.
Good. And I hear your wife has gone back to her career. What is it, nursing?
Health visitor.
Oh. It's good for a woman to have her work to go back to when the children have gone.
Yes. Do you think you could fix me a lift back to the office? I came in Marsden's car.
Yes, of course.
Right.
See Sergeant Elliot on your way out. No, we must have a drink together one evening.
Yeah, yes, right. Cheer. Hi, Freddy.
Oh, hello, Edgar. I've left Marsden downstairs, sir.
He can stew for a few minutes. I want you to clear yourself with Brighton, and then go down there and bring this man in. It's Lynn Marsden's boyfriend.
Very nice. Edgar come up with us, sir?
Yeah. He was carrying out an inquiry for Marsden.
Well, Marsden said nothing about that last night.
No. But he's going to say plenty this morning. Fetch him in.
Huh.
Oh, and get on to records and see if anything's known about Crane.
Do I tell Crane anything?
As little as possible. He may have heard something on the local radio.
I thought we were going to have to do a lot of hard graft on this one, sir. It's handy Edgar coming forward like that, eh?
Yes. Although we would have got on to Crane anyway. It's a pity about Edgar. A good man, but he just lacked that little something. Ability to cooperate, I suppose. Still, he's off our backs now.
Very neat and tidy. Anything in there?
Two cases on top of the wardrobe, sir. A razor and toothbrush still in the bathroom.
Nothing in his death diary about being away today. He'd booked 1, 2, 3 hairdressing appointments for this afternoon. You did radio to meet Sergeant Thomas, sir?
Yes, sir.
There's plenty of bills. Strange, no personal letters. Or photos. Come in.
Sorry if we kept you waiting, sir.
Well?
Crane was seen going out in his car last night about 7. No one knows why or where.
And what about the car?
He garages it across the road. We're in there. A red Capri, our registration, black roof. No one saw him come back.
Have you located any friends or relations?
Well, not friends. Plenty of acquaintances at the pub up the road.
And what do they say about him?
Well, they weren't very forthcoming. The landlord said Crane was pleasant enough. Seemed intelligent. No steady girlfriends that he knew of. Highly strung, he thought.
Highly strung?
Well, he said Crane tended to get very intense sometimes. Emotional. Over quite trivial things.
What about family?
Oh, he spoke once or twice of a sister in Luton. Never went there, as far as anyone knows.
I'd better put out a call for the car. I shall need more men, too. Get Gray and Foster off that supermarket break-in and tell them to come down here.
Right.
They can call at the station. Those photographs of Lynn Marsden should be ready by now. They can bring them down. Oh, and ask for the fingerprints, people.
Right, sir.
We'd better start having a closer look at this place. Her fingerprints may be here.
Hang on. Oh. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Edgar. I was passing, so I thought I'd call in with your other shoes. I found them under the bed, in the spare bedroom. You only took one pair.
Did I? Yeah, well, half my stuff's still in the car.
Didn't realize you were living here till I bumped into Jack Elliott yesterday.
Oh, it's only temporary until I find somewhere. Well, how are you keeping?
Fine, thanks.
House okay?
Yes. Oh, the radiator in the hall's gone funny again.
Well, it's probably an airlock. I'll try and call in to fix it.
How's business?
Well, it was steady. Sit down. Here, I'll... I'll the other way. There we are. I've just made some tea. You don't mind if I carry on with my lunch?
No, you better eat it before it goes cold.
Hmm. Well, there's another cup somewhere. Ah, here we are. Here. Help yourself to milk.
Thanks.
You fancy a chip?
No, thanks. Haven't you got any plates?
Somewhere. I prefer them out of the paper, though. Chips are a price, aren't they? My cost of living has shot up.
I had a letter from Ruth this morning.
What's she have to say?
She's finding the children a handful, reading between the lines.
Yeah. Well, Brum's a rough old place to start teaching. She'll soon get them sorted.
She mentions bringing Mark home for Christmas.
Mark? Oh, he's the latest, is he?
She's been going with him for 2 years. I think they're living together.
Oh, it's the latest thing, I understand. For the young and unmarried, that is. Have you written and told her about us?
No. Wasn't sure what to do. I suppose she'll have to know the truth.
And what's that?
It was your idea to move out, Edgar.
Well, as I understood it was change jobs or get out.
I didn't say that.
No?
No, I didn't. I said I wanted a normal life. It's what I expected after you finished in the police.
Well, I can't always pick the hours I work in this job.
You could have picked a different job.
Such as?
Well, half a dozen possibilities. You said so yourself.
This is the only thing I'm any good at.
Snooping into other people's lives. Does it matter who sleeps with whom?
I thought you thought it did.
I suppose I asked for that.
Well, we private eyes are very slick on the wisecrack. I know me Raymond Chandler. Oh, I sit here waiting for this luscious blonde to come in and wrap herself round me.
You're going to wait a long time in Copley Heath. I shall have to be going. You'll let me know what you're going to do about telling Ruth.
What I'm going to do?
All right, we're going to do.
Yeah, well, I'll think about it. There's plenty of time.
5 weeks. I hope you realize that if you live on fish and chips, you'll get your stomach trouble again.
Where on the map is the laundrette?
Just here, sir. The garage is there, Crane's flat here. The attendant at the laundrette says she often sees him at night when he comes back in the car.
But not on the 23rd?
No, sir. Possible sighting of his car here, moving northward sometime after 7.
Well, Lennox Wood is here.
Mm.
Well, that's the right direction. So he went out in the car about 7. Every indication that he intended to return, but no one knows where he is.
Mm.
Well, assuming that he attacked and killed Lynn Marsden, why didn't he come back to the flat and pack a few things before he cleared off?
Well, I mean, he probably drove off in a blind panic. Seems he's the type to act on impulse. Plenty of evidence. He always carried a wallet full of fivers around with him.
You saw his sister yourself?
Yes, sir. No contact for years and no love lost, I should say. She didn't even know he was living in Brighton. No other immediate relations.
Well, somebody must have some idea where he's gone.
Yeah, excuse me, sir. Sergeant Thomas? Yeah? Where? Map reference? Right.
You're sure?
Good, now hang on a moment.
It's Cartwright, sir. He's found Crane's car. Lumley Point. There, just off the A259.
You saw his photo in the Standard?
Hmm?
His photograph, Crane's.
Yeah, I saw it.
Makes me look a right Burke. I mean, it more or less says they were having it.
Jimmy, Crane's cleared off. The police are looking for him. That lets you off the hook, right? You're never satisfied.
The papers will make a right meal of it when the coppers find him. It's bad enough now. The number of people I've had round the shop, just to look. Morbid bleeders.
You don't have to tell me, Jimmy. On Sunday, they'll all be driving out to Lennox Wood to have a look where it happened. Puts one off one's fellow man. Well, now, if you'll excuse me, I've got a rather crucial darts match to warm up for.
And what did the Coast Guard say?
If he went in somewhere around Lumley Point, it's quite feasible he would wash up where he did. You see the body, sir?
Yes, barely recognisable. It's been in the sea for some time. But they're quite sure it's Crane. The pathologist is sending somebody over with a report as soon as it's finished.
Well, the tide was in below Lumley Point just after 11, but it'd take a hell of a nerve to jump.
No, he wouldn't be the first.
Any marks of violence?
Only where the tide had knocked him against the rocks. Nothing else as far as the initial examination showed. So let's see what we've got. Crane meets Lynn Marsden at Lennox Wood around 7:30.
Yeah.
He parks his car close to hers. There's little doubt that those other tire tracks are his. He goes across to her car and sits in the passenger seat. They talk and then start arguing. It gets heated, turns violent. She turns to try and get out, but he grabs at her, probably catches hold of the scarf she was wearing. She struggles, he pulls and keeps pulling. Is the scarf strong enough?
Yes, sir, according to forensic.
So? He sees she's dead. He rushes back to his own car and drives off, not caring where he was going. He finishes up at Lumley Point and decides to go in. Oh, does it straight off the top, still in a blind panic.
There's something in the statement Buckley took from the landlord of Crane's pub. Where is it? Oh, here. Vincent once told me he had attempted suicide some years previously by trying to gas himself.
We've not come up with anything further on that.
No, but several people have said he was an emotional type, unstable, someone said, although nothing to show he could turn violent.
It's in all of us, Sergeant, given the right or wrong provocation.
Yeah, well, I wonder what she said.
Oh, probably something quite trivial. To us, that is. Go and see if you can find me a shorthand typist, will you?
Yes, sir.
We may as well make a start.
It's a bit late in the day for gardening.
Oh, hello. I've been meaning to prune these for ages.
Hmm.
Hope it's not too late.
You're going at it a bit brutal, aren't you?
The man on the telly cut them further back than this. What are you doing out this way?
Well, it is my home, technically speaking.
A social call, is it?
No, not really. I've just been working in Macaulay Close, so I thought I'd call round.
Macaulay Close?
Yeah, a bloke who works on nights is convinced his wife is giving the insurance man a bit more than the weekly payments.
And is she?
Well, if she is, she's after the world record. He was only in there just over a minute. How's that radiator?
Seems to have sorted itself out, Touchwood.
Ah.
I see your friend Inspector Wilmot's in the news again.
Yes, that'll make his day. Photograph in the paper. Another case off the books.
Now, don't get bitter.
Bitter? I wish I'd been born with a tenth of his luck, that's all. When I put him on to, what's his name, Crane, I thought at least he's going to have to do some work on this one.
I didn't know you were involved.
I'm not. I passed on some information, that's all.
About the man who committed suicide?
About the man they found dead.
Didn't he kill himself?
Very probably. Well, it makes no odds now. Wilmot's written it off.
Just like old times, hearing you go on about Wilmot.
I'm not going on. I'm just saying he's lucky, that's all. And when he's not lucky, he's careful. If I'd hedged my bets as carefully as he has, I'd be top man by now.
You've never really left the force, have you, Edgar?
Friday morning was the first time I've set foot in the place since I left.
I didn't mean that. I meant in spirit.
Oh, that. Speaking of spirits, if we walk very slowly, we'll arrive at the George bang on opening time.
I'm sorry. I promised to babysit for the Jacksons in 10 minutes.
Oh. Some other time, then?
Yes. Have you decided about Ruth.
Ruth?
I told you, in your office. She's coming for Christmas.
Oh, that. Well, I haven't had time to think about it. Oh. It's a quid you'll never see a bloom on that again.
Ah, Edgar. I was hoping I might catch you.
Hello. You have a drink?
No. My shot. I insist. Oh, you a drink for your help on the Marsden case. What are you drinking?
Scotch, please.
A large one?
Why not?
large scotch and a half a bitter, please.
I thought you usually drank at the Swan.
Yes, usually. But I was just passing, and it's some time since I called here. I like to show my face. Water?
I'll see to it, thanks. There. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
Mm. I hear you wrapped the Marsden case up very nicely.
Oh, it resolved itself, more or less.
Mm. Why did Crane kill her? Some sort of lover's tiff?
Yes, we think so. It was never clearly established, except for your statement that they didn't seem to be on good terms. We did find that they'd known each other for some time, so perhaps it was an old disagreement.
Mm. How long have they known each other?
Oh, 2 years at least. They both worked at a private nursing home near Eastbourne, a place called Heathfields, tin pot sort of place. Lynn Marsden was a nurse come receptionist. Crane called himself a male nurse.
Oh. This was before Lynn met Jimmy?
Yes. She left just before she met him. Presumably she resumed contact with Crane shortly afterwards. Or they may have kept in touch.
I see.
You look worried, Edgar.
You don't think it's all too plausible?
In what way?
Well, everything seems to fall too nicely into place.
You never did like the straightforward ones, Edgar.
I never seemed to get any.
I think you did, but you insisted on looking for difficulties. Well, you know what we had on Crane. Opportunity, means, motive, a mass of forensic evidence, plus the fact that he ran. Well, if he hadn't taken his own life, we would have caught him and got a conviction. No trouble.
Assuming that he didn't have an alibi.
If he had an alibi, why did he run? I mean, who else was there? Marsden was covered for both deaths. Every case is full of complications, Edgar. Things are sometimes precisely what they seem. I hope you'll forgive my saying this, but you never progressed as far as you should have in the force because you sometimes fail to look at things simply and logically.
Hmm. Like the Grinley case.
Yes, if you like. Take it easy, Edgar. Leave the worrying to us. We get paid for it.
Right, I'll do that. Another drink?
No, thank you, no. I must be going. Oh, Arthur Steele asked me to recommend someone for a little job he wants doing. I gave him your number. The usual thing.
The Brighton Trade?
No. Yeah. That's very good. It's usually Brighton, is it?
Usually. It's astonishing how many of them choose there. No imagination. Are you sure you won't have a drink?
No, thank you, Edgar. I'm in court this afternoon.
I'd appreciate it if you'd hang on a minute, Mr. Fenton. I'd like a word. I've just got to have a quick chat with Lynn's mother before she goes.
Well,
I'm not having anybody back at the house. We could talk there.
Blast.
Mr. Fenton?
Yes?
Oh, I don't think we've met, but your wife comes into my shop occasionally. Sylvia's on the high street.
Oh, yes.
This is a sad business, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ordinary funeral's bad enough, but this... Did you know Lynn well?
No, I never met her. Oh, Jimmy Marsden asked me to come along. He's no one here from his own family. I think he wanted moral support.
Oh, he's taken it very well, considering. But I wouldn't be surprised if he cracked up later.
Yes. Perhaps so.
He'll miss her. So shall I. I like Lynn. Always full of life.
Old friends, were you?
No, not really. Only the past 18 months or so. But we were quite close.
Did you know about Vincent Crane?
Not a thing. Until I saw the papers, that is. I wouldn't have thought it of her. She liked a good time, but I wouldn't have thought that. It explains one thing, though.
Huh? What's that?
Well, Lynn was never short of money.
I remember the first time we went out together, it was taxis up to the West End, best seats at the Black and White Minstrels, and she insisted on paying. I think it was her birthday. Of course, after that, I insisted on paying my way, but...
You think the money came from Crane?
Oh, I don't think it came from Jimmy. He's doing quite well, but I don't think he could have kept her going on that scale. She spent quite a lot on clothes. I don't think Jimmy knows how much she did spend.
Hmm. Did the police question you about Lynn?
Well, they sent a young fella round to the shop. They were only interested in finding out about the man. I said nothing about the money. Well, their business, is it? Makes no difference now she's dead, does it? You know, I still can't believe it.
Same again. No thanks, Jimmy. No, I ought to be going.
I appreciate you coming back. I dreaded coming back alone to an empty house.
Look, Jimmy, why not go back into town tonight, eh? Have a few drinks with your mates. I'll drop you off.
Yeah, I might do that.
Yes, well, I shall have to go.
But hang on. Listen, there's something I want to tell you.
Yes?
Well, I was looking through Lynn's dressing table and I found this. In a box she keeps her makeup things in. Well, go on, look at it.
You didn't know about this?
I hadn't a clue.
Well, plenty of women keep a savings account of their own on the sly, Jimmy. Perhaps it dates from before you were married.
No, it doesn't. Look, she opened it not long after we were married. And look at the amount. Over £1,000. Regular deposits as much as 60 quid at a time. Well, where did it come from?
The business?
She was milking the takings, you mean? No chance. Lynn wasn't like that anyway.
Jimmy, just after the funeral, I was talking to Lynn's friend, Sylvia. She said Lynn always seemed to have plenty to spend.
Well, I didn't stint her.
Yeah, but, did you know that Lynn and Sylvia used to go to West End shows? Meals, taxis, you know, the lot. According to Sylvia, she spent a small fortune at the local shops, dresses and so on.
Well, I knew they went out, but Lynn never said nothing about the West End. I thought they went out locally. I mean, Lynn, God rest her soul, was no beauty. It can't be some bloke paying for you-know-what, can it?
What about Crane?
He can't have been paying her for it.
No, I didn't mean that.
Well, what then?
Blackmail?
He was only a bloody barber. How could he shell out like that?
Well, perhaps he was on some sort of fiddle, and Lynn was keeping the money for him. They may have been saving to clear off together. Perhaps that's why they were disagreeing.
I don't think it was like that at all. I'll tell you something now, Mr. Fenton, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but I don't think they were lovers. I've thought a lot about it, and I don't think they were.
Yeah. Perhaps you're right.
Makes no odds now, does it? She dead. And him. Whatever they were up to didn't do them much good, did it?
No.
What do I do with the book?
Well, legally it's yours, I suppose. Or it will be when everything's sorted out.
Well, that's what I thought. And I could do with the money.
I thought the shop was doing well.
Well, it is. Very steady, but who couldn't use a grand? The business is fine as long as I put the hours in, and I haven't felt like it lately. What would you do with this, Mr. Fenton?
Me? I'd put it in a drawer and forget about it for a while.
It couldn't be withholding evidence or something like that, could it?
Jimmy, the case is closed. And it may have nothing to do with that anyway. But you take it to the police if it bothers you.
Oh, I don't want them stirring things up again. What if you looked into it for me?
Jimmy, just put it away. Forget about it.
I need to know. I mean, it could be all straight and above board, couldn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, how do you think I could find out?
I'll pay, like last time.
Jimmy, it'd be wasting your money.
I've got to clear a name, don't you see, Mr. Fenton?
Yeah, but finding out about the money wouldn't do that. You and I are the only ones who know anyway.
I have to clear a name for myself.
You want me to find out that she wasn't unfaithful?
I have to know.
Jimmy, it's all over.
I've got to know.
All right. All right. I'll do what I can.
Mind if I sit down?
No. Help yourself.
You were asking at the bar about Vincent.
Vincent Crane.
Yeah. Did you know him?
Are you the law?
No.
Insurance, something like that?
No, nothing like that. Here, let me get you a drink.
I'm all right just now, thanks. What are you then, reporter?
Yes, that's it.
The papers have already covered the story.
Well, they reported the facts. I want to go a bit deeper.
Oh, I see. Are you paying?
Could be. It depends.
What was in the papers didn't make much sense to me.
In what way?
Vincent never had an affair with that woman.
No?
No.
You mean she wasn't his type?
You could say that.
But they used to meet. Why was that? Business?
It wasn't the other, I know that.
Did he ever mention her?
Never. Not once. First time I knew about it was when I saw the papers. Vincent had a horror of violence. He couldn't have done a thing like that. He wasn't above the odd little fiddle, but he couldn't have done that. And I'll tell you something else.
Yeah?
He never killed himself either.
Why do you say that?
I knew him. He couldn't have done it, any of it.
Well, if he didn't commit suicide, what happened?
I don't know. I only know he could not have jumped into the sea like that or strangled that woman.
Have you, told the police?
I was away when they came round asking. And anyway, as a general principle, I tell them nothing. I know Vincent was a good friend, but what I say isn't going to alter the fact that he's dead, is it? And the police are only interested in what you know, aren't they? Not in what you feel.
Would you like that drink now?
Yes, please. Vodka and lime.
6681.
This is a friend of Lynn's.
I'm sorry, I think you must have the wrong number.
No, I don't think so. I've got it here, you see, in her own writing.
Lynn?
Lynn Marsden.
Marsden. I know no one by that name, I'm sorry, but you've obviously...
Well, Lynn Foster, then.
Eh? What?
Oh, hello, Mr. Fenton.
Looking forward to your holiday.
Oh, yeah, just see me right a few days in the sun.
It's more than a few days, isn't it?
Oh, I shall see how it goes. Here on business, are you? Somebody taking his secretary to Paris?
I came to see you, Jimmy. Shall we go and have a cup of tea?
Hmm? I meant to give you a ring. Completely slipped my mind. I've found out about the money myself. Dead obvious, only I didn't stop to think about it.
Where did the money come from?
Family. Come from a sister. Lynn was looking after it for her. She's got a hairdressing business.
And why was Lynn looking after her sister's money?
Oh, I don't know. Probably some sort of tax fiddle. Doesn't do to ask too closely, does it? So I sent you on a wild goose chase.
I wouldn't say that.
Oh. Well, I must owe you something. Same as last time.
A fiver will cover it.
Right, five it is. Sorry, I forgot.
Yes. You've got a lot on your mind.
Well, yes, that's why I decided to get away from things for a bit. Well, I'd better get moving.
I said I want to talk to you, Jimmy. Now, sit down.
Look, I'm sorry about not paying you. I'll tell you what. Here's another five.
You keep it.
You can't stop me going. You're not the law now.
One phone call to Wilmot, and you'll be back in the nick. There's plenty of time for him to check on Lynn's money, keeping it for her sister. Jimmy... Why are you running?
I'm not running. I'm just having a few days' holiday.
Your ticket is valid for 6 months. Who are you running from? Me?
Why should I run from you?
Because I know Crane didn't kill himself. And if he didn't, who did?
How should I know?
Wilmot will lean very hard on you, Jimmy. You've messed the police about, and you've messed me about.
Look, I had nothing to do with any of it. Just leave it alone, Mr. Fenton.
I believe you. I don't think you had anything to do with any of it at first. But you have now.
I know nothing.
You know enough to make you run. Now, were you involved in either of the killings?
No.
Right. Tell me what you know, and you can catch your claim. Whatever you tell me, it's only my word against yours. I'm not the law now.
Then why push it?
Because I want the truth.
And what good will that do you?
No good at all, Jimmy. No good at all. But I still want to know. Hmm? Right. I'll give you my version. Crane and Lynn were blackmailing somebody. He paid them regularly. So either there was some disagreement about the money and Crane killed Lynn, then himself, or whoever they were blackmailing got rid of them both and made it look right for the police. Now, which is it, Jimmy?
Well, I don't know, do I?
Well, what do you know?
You meant what you said about keeping me out of it?
I said you could catch your plane. I can't vouch for what will happen after that. It depends on what you tell me.
Oh, bloody marvellous, that is.
Jimmy, you stand a better chance with me than with the law. Would you rather tell Wilmot?
You'll let me go?
If you're not involved in the murders, yes.
Well, after I found that bank book, I searched right through the house. I thought there might be some cash somewhere, and I found this diary hidden behind the back of Lynn's dressing table. I read through it. There didn't seem to be much of the usual stuff. Birthdays, hairdressing appointments, and so on. And then I noticed these figures about monthly intervals. I checked with the bank book, and all the dates are a few days before she banks the money.
What about the amounts?
Well, they tallied more or less with what was in the bank book.
All right, so Lynn was receiving regular payments from someone. I've already worked that out.
But that isn't all. I took a closer look at the diary. Then I went through the telephone numbers written in the back. There weren't many, most of them I knew. There was one, VC, which I reckon was Crane's. Then there was one I couldn't place. DRG, and a London telephone number. I've got the diary here.
Let's have a look. Mm-hmm. Did she always write everything in capital letters?
Yes, yes. Look, all the way through. She even wrote postcards and notes in capitals.
Now, where's she written the amounts?
Here.
Mm-hmm.
And here. Now, look at this one. There's a G after the number.
Mm.
And this one, see?
Yes. You think this DRG could be the one she was blackmailing?
I know it is.
How?
I rang the number.
You bloody fool.
Well, I'd had a drink or two, and I thought it can't do any harm.
You thought that if he could afford to keep Lynn quiet, he could afford to pay you, right?
I hadn't thought it out. I did it off the cuff without thinking, and like I said, I'd had a drink. I expected it to turn out to be some friend of Lynn's. I didn't know.
So, you telephoned the number in the diary?
Yes. A man answered, well-spoken, just gave the number, not his name.
What did you say?
I said I was a friend of Lynn's, and I wanted to talk about money. A final payment. But, like I said, I'd had a drink.
How much did you ask for?
Nothing. I suddenly thought, what if he did it? The bloke at the other end of the phone and me talking to him. I felt sick. And he says, how much do you want? How much? Almost in tears he was, and I hung up. I was bloody shaking. I haven't stopped since. I mean, he could get on to me dead easy. Wouldn't take much working out, would it?
No. And if he's the one who set up Lynn's death, he's not working single-handed. Otherwise, he couldn't have got rid of Crane. Why haven't you been to the police with this, Jimmy?
Admit to withholding evidence and attempted blackmail.
It's only your word against his.
And who would they believe?
Jimmy, there's something else, isn't there? Now, what is it?
The night Lynn was killed, I came home from the pub, like I said, but I didn't stay in. When I saw she wasn't home, I went straight out again.
Where to?
Crane's flat. I thought Lynn would be there. I was going to give him a thumping, but he wasn't there. Neither was she. I came back home. I got back just a few minutes before the coppers called.
Jimmy, you're in the clear. Now, if you go and tell
Mr.
Wilmot...
Mr. Fenton, all I want is to be out of it, right? Look, you keep the diary. Do what you like with it. Can't you tell them I gave it to you and you worked out about the money?
You'd be better off going to the police.
Just give me time to get over the other side. That's all I ask, all right? If it all gets settled, nothing happens, I mean, I'll see you all right when I get back.
Oh, clear off before I change my mind. I asked old Frank to call me back at this number. I hope you don't mind.
It is your house. Will he be able to find out about the telephone number?
Oh, yes.
How does he do it?
He used to work for the GPO. Give him a London telephone number. He'll come up with something.
Surely he's not supposed to do that.
No, but he owes me a favour.
The world's full of people who owe you a favour, Edgar.
True. But they don't all remember. Ah. Yes? Speaking. Oh, hello again, Frank. Any joy? Good. Right, ready? Yeah. That's Gerard, G-E-R-R-A-R-D. What? A doctor? Yes. 6A, Albion House, Knightsbridge. Well, that's very good of you, Frank. Yeah. Yes, I'll be in touch. Cheers. Thanks again. Ah, Dr. David Gerard. I should have thought of the doctor bit.
Hmm?
The DR in DRG stands for doctor.
What are you going to do?
Go down to Eastbourne. Nose around Heathfields. It's odds on that this Dr. Gerard worked there. Or still works there.
Why do you think that?
Well, it seems a logical tie-up. Vincent Crane and Lynn met at Heathfields. They began receiving payments just after they left there. This man's a doctor, and his phone number is in Lynn's diary.
But I don't see why you're going there.
To nose around.
But why? Isn't it time to tell Inspector Wilmot, Edgar? You've found enough to make him reopen the case.
When I go to Wilmot, I want to be able to tell him everything.
So that you can crow?
Well, why not? He's preached at me often enough. Perhaps after this one, he'll start to think more about the truth and less about his bloody crime figures.
But why bother anyway? Oh, nothing's changed, has it, Edgar? I thought since we started seeing each other again, things were getting better. But it's worse than when you were in the police. At least then you could say it was the job you were paid to do. But it isn't now. You don't have to prove yourself to Wilmot or the station or me or anybody. It doesn't matter.
It matters to me. Would you like to come down to Eastbourne with me? It won't take long. We could go for a meal afterwards.
I'm sorry, I can't. I've got to visit a family. They're never in during the day, so...
Oh. Right, well, I'd better get going.
We still haven't decided anything about Ruth. She wrote again asking about Christmas.
Well, I'll call back here when I get back from Eastbourne and we'll talk about it. If you'll be in.
Yes, I'll be in.
Mr. Cooper?
Yes?
Well, I've taken the liberty of bringing you a drink. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've a shocking memory for faces these days.
We haven't met, Mr. Cooper. The landlord pointed you out. I understand you work at Heathfields.
That's right. Caretaker. Odd job, man. Whatever you like to call it. What is it you want, Mr...
Fenton. Just a little information, Mr. Cooper.
Information?
Oh, nothing underhand, Mr. Cooper. Now, perhaps I should explain. I'm a writer.
A writer?
Well, perhaps journalists would be more accurate.
And how can I help you, Mr. Fenton?
Well, I'm writing what we call an in-depth piece on two people who worked at Heathfields. Now, you must have known them. Lynn Marsden, Foster as she was then, and Vincent Crane.
Ah, the two died.
Yes, yes. Do you remember them?
Yes, very well.
Good, good. Is the drink okay?
Oh, yes, fine, thanks. Your health.
Cheers.
A writer, you say?
Mm. Yes, I am. I specialise in crime writing. Real-life drama, you know, that sort of thing.
Ah.
Now, before I start writing a word, I like to go into the thing thoroughly. Pick up every bit of background knowledge I can. I don't use it all, but it helps if I can absorb as much as possible before I start.
Oh, I see. I thought you might be the police.
Have they been here?
Yes. When they were looking for Crane.
Ah. What exactly... was Crane's job at Heathfields?
Oh, a male nurse, he called himself. Walked about in a little white coat, hoping people would mistake him for a doctor. He didn't half fancy himself.
And what did Lynn Marsden do?
She was a nurse, but she acted as a sort of receptionist as well.
Did they both live in?
Yes. And I'll tell you something.
Yeah?
If there was anything between them, they kept it very dark. And Heathfields isn't the best place to keep a secret.
Mm. How many on the staff?
Oh, I don't know exactly. Seven... No. Eight nurses. And the domestic staff. Two doctors.
Are they the same doctors who were at Heathfields in Lynn Marsden's time?
No. Old Ferguson died last March.
Oh.
The other, Gerard, left. almost 2 years ago.
Gerard? Unusual name.
Unusual bloke.
In what way?
Hey, look. You're not going to say you got all this stuff from me, are you?
Oh, you won't be quoted, Mr. Cooper. I can assure you of that.
It's just that I got to be careful, see? Doctors don't like staff who talk behind their backs.
It's not only doctors. Now, don't you worry. Now, I respect my sources. Respect and protect, Mr. Cooper. Now, then, you said this Dr. Gerard was an unusual bloke. What way?
Well, you know, burnt the candle at both ends. With a vengeance. Up to London every end and turn. Ooh, I've seen him back at 3 a.m. and treating a patient at 9. Oh.
Where did he go in London?
Some club, I think. I once heard him talking to Ferguson about it.
Can you remember the name of the club?
No. No, I think I only heard it once. It was a gambling club, I know that. Oh, he was a real man for a flutter, was Dr. Gerard. Anything. Mind you, he was good at his job. Ran the place single-handed.
What about the other doctor?
Ferguson?
Yeah.
Oh, a sick man himself. And too fond of the bottle. Very near 70.
Mm. Where did Gerard live when he was down here?
He had a flat in the annex.
Any family?
Well, I think he was divorced. He's got a daughter at school near Tunbridge.
And did he have much contact with Crane and Lynn Marsden?
Well, it isn't a very big place. He was bound to see a lot of them.
But nothing special?
No. Oh, wait a minute. There was that business of the patient in the annex.
What was that?
Well, can't recall that much about it. Except one night, there's nobody in the annex. They never use it much. And the next morning, there's somebody in there. Just appeared overnight. Not even the sister knew who it was. Dr. Gerard looked after the case personally. And Lynn Foster was over there most of the time.
What about Crane?
We shared the duty with her, I think. They were both on night call when whoever it was brought in.
Did you ever find out who it was?
No. He was here about a week. Then he went, just like he came, in the night. Nobody knew what to make of it.
Well, there must have been talk.
Well, I heard it was some VIP who got in a car accident and he was brought here to avoid the breathalyzer. Bit far-fetched, I thought.
Well, Lynn Marsden must have had some idea if she helped to treat him.
She said not. His face was bandaged, you see. The doctor changed the dressings himself.
You mean the man's head was injured?
Yeah. Well, there were other injuries as well, I think. I can remember going down to the annex one morning to see to the boiler, and he was gone. The place was locked, and his room was empty.
Didn't Crane and Lynn ever talk about it?
Not to me. Well, I think they were as puzzled as everybody else.
Here, let me get you a refill. Same again.
Oh, thank you.
Double 681.
Dr. Gerard?
Speaking.
My name is Fenton, Doctor. I'd like to see you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Fenton, but I can't possibly see anyone tonight. If it's urgent, I suggest you contact 57896.
It's a personal matter, Doctor.
Personal? Concerning you or me?
You. I don't think we should discuss it over the phone. I'd like to see you this evening.
What is it you want to discuss, Mr. Fenton?
I think you might be able to guess that, Doctor. And don't ring off, please. If you do, I shall only have to ring the police.
You want to see me now?
Yes. I'm only a few minutes away.
I should like to know more, Mr. Fenton.
I've just driven up from Heathfields, Doctor. 10 o'clock?
Yes, if you wish.
Shall I come to your flat?
No. No, I'm in the middle of a dinner party. There are too many people about.
Well, where shall I see you?
There's a residence car park beneath this building. I'll see you there.
Where's the entrance?
Just off Queen Street.
Right. 10 minutes.
Where are you speaking from?
London. Knightsbridge.
Knightsbridge? I thought you were at Eastbourne.
I've just come from there. Our Dr. Gerard was at Heathfield's at the same time as Len Marston.
And now you're going to try and see him?
Yes.
What if he won't see you?
He will. I've already phoned him.
Edgar, I think you should tell Wilmot.
All in good time.
Oh, you love it, don't you? Grubbing about, wheedling bits of information out of people, putting it all together. It's like some stupid game.
Let's not go over that again. Look, I rang to say that I don't think I'll be able to get over tonight and have that talk about Ruth. What about tomorrow?
What about tomorrow? Oh, idiot. Stupid, stubborn idiot. Oh.
Mr. Fenton?
Yes?
David Gerard.
A car park isn't the best place to talk, Doctor.
I'm sorry, but the flat's full of people. It would be impossible to talk there.
Your flat is above here?
The second floor. Look, perhaps it would be easier if we sat in my car. It's over there.
All right.
A personal matter, I think you said, Mr. Fenton.
Personal and professional.
I don't follow.
It involves both your professional and private life.
I see. Who are you, Mr. Fenton?
I'm an inquiry agent. Ex-CID.
And you're on some sort of inquiry involving me?
Not directly. A few weeks ago, I was engaged to make inquiries concerning a woman called Lynn Marsden. She was a nurse at Heathfield's when you were there. You knew her as Lynn Foster. Small, auburn hair, mid-30s?
Yes, I think I can recall her vaguely.
Yes, she was friendly with a man called Vincent Crane. He was at Heathfield's too. Perhaps you remember him.
Yes, I remember Crane.
Did you know that they're both dead?
No. Well, I left Heathfield some time ago, Mr. Fenton.
Lynn Marsden was murdered. Crane committed suicide. The police assumed that he killed her and then himself. It was in all the papers.
Well, I may have read something about it. But, of course, I wouldn't place the name. As you say, I knew her as Lynn Foster. And naturally, I'm sorry to hear about their deaths, Mr. Fenton, but I don't really see why you're here. Well, I knew them slightly, in a professional capacity, nothing more.
Well, I don't think Crane killed Lynn Marsden. Or himself.
Well, I don't see how that concerns me.
Well, I think it does. They were blackmailing you. It would be very easy for the police to check on the payments, Doctor. No doubt you paid them in cash, and it had to come from somewhere. And there's a man you treated and hid at Heathfield's. And that could be aiding and abetting.
Why don't you say how much you want, Mr. Fenton?
Oh, you think it's blackmail. You go and ring the police.
Then what do you want?
I want to know what happened.
Why?
Now, that's a long story, and it doesn't concern you.
No. And what happens if I do tell you?
Well, I'll give you time to go to the police yourself. Make a voluntary statement.
Well, what sort of a choice is that?
It'll give you a chance to see a lawyer, get your story straight. You'll probably get bail if he plays it right. Now, if I tell the police, they'll fetch you in and throw the book at you.
That still sounds like blackmail.
And what I know sounds like accessory to murder. Now, who was the man you treated at Heathfield's? Mike Francis.
How do you know that?
I don't. It's a sensible guess, that's all. He was wounded in an East End shooting at about the right time. He had connections with various gambling clubs, as you did, and he vanished with two possible murder charges down to him.
I was a compulsive gambler. Did you know that, Mr. Fenton?
It seemed likely.
I used to gamble at a club in Soho, run by a man called Devereux. I got into debt to the tune of 5,000. I don't know why they let it run as high as that, unless they thought it might be handy to have a doctor in debt to them. Well, one night at Heathfield's, I received a phone call from Devereux. He said he was in the vicinity and had a friend with him who was ill. He asked if he could bring him to see me, and I said yes. I turned up in about 5 minutes. I saw immediately that the man had been shot. He'd lost a lot of blood and was in a bad way, so I suggested that he should be taken to hospital at once. Deborah said he wanted him to stay at Heathfield's.
Did he threaten you?
No. He offered to cancel my gambling debts in return for looking after Francis until he was well enough to move. Well, I said no. And then he said he knew where my daughter was at school. And if I didn't do as he asked, something would happen to her. He had a man waiting for instructions. He'd only to pick up the telephone.
What did you do?
Well, what could I do? Well, this wasn't a calm, rational discussion, Mr. Fenton. The man was there, bleeding and unconscious. And I was terrified for my daughter's safety. Well, we took him to the surgery, and I removed 2 bullets from his shoulder. It wasn't as bad as I thought. But it was obvious that he couldn't be moved. So we put him in the annex.
Yeah. Was that when Lynn Marsden saw him?
Well, she wasn't there when they arrived. She must have got a glimpse of him later. The next day, I bandaged his face so that he couldn't be recognized.
What about Deborah? Did he stay?
No, but he repeated his threat. He said if the police came anywhere near Heathfield's, I would never see my daughter again.
Hmm. What about the other doctor?
Ferguson?
Hmm.
Oh, he was a sick man. Well, virtually an alcoholic. He had no idea what was happening most of the time.
How long did Francis stay?
5 days. Each day I told myself I'd ring the police, but I never did. And by that time, Deborah had offered me £1,000 for every day that Francis stayed. Well, he must have been as strong as a horse. By the 5th day, he was on his feet, and Deborah collected him. Well, I thought that was the end of it.
What about their end of the bargain?
Oh, they kept that. I never heard anything more about my debts. And shortly afterwards, £5,000 in used notes turned up in a plastic shopping bag in the back of my car. Well, I didn't know what to do with it. I could hardly turn it into the police. So eventually I used it to buy myself into my present partnership.
Yeah. When did Crane and Lynn Marsden start asking for money?
Some time afterwards. Well, at the time Francis was at Heathfield's, they didn't recognize him. And there was no reason to suspect who he was, even if they'd read about the shootings. Now, there was some story going round that he was a friend of mine who was avoiding the police after having a minor pile-up.
So what put them on to Francis?
Well, some months after I moved here, I had a phone call from Crane. He said enough to make me worried. I agreed to meet him. He knew about Francis and the shooting. But I didn't see it, but in one of the colour supplements, there'd been an article called The Man Who Vanished, or something like that. It was about Francis. It said he'd probably died of wounds and his body had been dumped at sea. Well, there were several photographs of Francis. Lynn recognized him and contacted Crane. Well, I think the blackmail was his idea, although he didn't call it blackmail. He said they wanted their share for looking after Francis. They wanted $3,000 between them. Well, I couldn't raise that much in cash, so he agreed to take it in monthly installments.
And the payments became too much, hmm?
Oh, no. No. No, things went quite smoothly. And then Crane came to see me. He said Lynn had become very nervous about the whole business and was talking about going to the police. He suggested that if I paid them off in one final installment, she'd probably be all right. Well, perhaps he was just trying it on. I never found out.
He was probably telling the truth. That's about the time that Jimmy Marsden became suspicious when Lynn went down to Brighton to see Crane.
Well, I didn't know what to do. According to Crane, she was likely to go to the police at any time. So I rang Deborah at his club. I told him what had happened and asked him to lend me the money.
What did he say to that?
Very little. He told me to arrange to meet Crane and Lynn in Lennox Woods, but not to go myself. He would attend to it.
He did that all right.
Well, I was in Bristol when I read about it. And then Crane's body was found. I tried to convince myself that it had happened the way the papers said. I thought Devereux would pay them off. Or merely frighten them.
You thought that?
Well, what could I do?
What you're going to do now? Go to the police.
You see yourself as an avenging angel of justice, do you, Mr. Fenton? Or is it merely a taste for persecution?
But, no, Doctor. I'm just a nosy ex-copper. 2 people have died because you didn't have the sense or the guts to see beyond your own nose.
Do you think I don't know that? Look, Mr. Fenton, I can pay you. And I'm your retainer as a security consultant, all perfectly legal.
I don't want money.
Agree to take it. Please. I don't want any more...
Any more what? Killing? Have you told Devereux you were meeting me here?
Well, I thought you were the man who rang the other night.
After I rang you tonight, you told Devereux you were meeting me here?
Yes. Well, I thought it might be one of his own men who knew...
You thought? Do you know the kind of people you're dealing with, Doctor? Ah. The door to the lift is the nearest. Is there a staircase?
Yes, but...
When we get out of the car, we'll go over to the door. Now, behave naturally. Don't walk quickly. We've got to get out of the car park. What did Deborah say when you told him you were meeting me?
Well, very little. He asked me to let him know what happened. Well, his men may not be here.
Perhaps not. I wouldn't bank on it, though. Who's that? One of your neighbors?
No, I don't know the car.
I thought this was a private car park. Residence only.
It is, but it could be a visitor.
Oh, yes, it's a visitor, all right. Now, lock your door.
But I...
Lock your door and start the engine. There are three of them. They're getting out.
Are you sure that...
When I say so, reverse like hell, straight at them. You get it?
But I don't even know...
Use your eyes. The one on the left's got a shotgun. Start your engine. Now, go.
Right.
Now, straight up the ramp. Come on, man. Keep your head down, Gerard. Straight through the barrier. Look out!
Wilmot.
Sergeant Thomas here, sir.
Sergeant, it is 1:48 a.m. and I'm on leave.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but it is important.
Yes, it better be. Well?
There's been a call from the Met, sir. Serious crime squad.
And?
I believe they've come up with new evidence on the Marsden case.
Well, that was closed weeks ago. What new evidence?
I don't know, sir. The chief's handling it himself. I'm very much on the outside.
Is the chief there?
Gone to London, sir.
London?
Yeah, I think something's happened there, and, well, Edgar Fenton is involved in some way.
Fenton?
Well, that's the word that's going around here, sir. He's mixed up in it somewhere.
He damn well would be.
Is it the same leg you broke playing football?
No, it was the other one. Did the sister tell you anything?
She said it was a straightforward break, no complications. They were more worried about the concussion. You were out a long time.
Turned out to be very handy. Kept the law off my back.
Has Wilmot been yet?
No. No, I've had bigger brass than Wilmot.
What were they like?
Very considerate. One of them brought me some grapes.
Did they say anything about your not going to the police sooner?
They did mention it. Why should they grumble? It isn't their CID that's going to get hammered by the press. And they've got Devereux banged to rights. Something they've been after for years. I dare say they'll get a lead on Francis, too.
Jack Elliott's wife rang. She says Wilmot's furious.
Ha, ha, ha. Good. I shall enjoy lying here, thinking about all the grafting he's got to do to get himself out of this one. He'll have a hell of a job proving who killed Lynn Marsden and Vincent Crane.
What about Deborah?
Oh, he fixed it. But he'll have a dozen witnesses to say he was in London on the night it happened. And Wilmot is going to sweat over that one. Have a grape.
Thanks. Have you seen Dr. Gerard since the accident?
Yes, they let him come in for a few minutes.
How is he?
Oh, he seemed all right. He only collected a few bruises and a cut head.
What are they charging him with?
Well, the lawyers are sorting that out. He may not come out of it too badly. He can claim the aiding and abetting was under duress. And if he says he didn't know that Crane and Lynn were dead, which is possible, they'll have problems proving anything there.
What about you?
Well, I've already told him I can't remember much about the conversation with Gerard. The concussion, you see. Very convenient.
Can't they charge you with something?
Yes, they can take their pick. Withholding evidence, obstructing the course of justice, etc., etc.
And will they?
I don't know. I don't care very much.
You'll lose your license.
They can keep it.
You're finishing?
Yep. I'm turning in my dirty raincoat and my street map of Brighton.
You don't like being shot at?
I prefer to nosing around tatty hotels or sitting in the car all night trying to keep awake. No. No, it isn't that. It was something Dr. Gerard said.
What was that?
He asked me if I saw myself as an avenging angel of justice.
Very poetic.
It touched me on a raw spot.
Why?
Because it was near the truth, I suppose. I'd got emotionally involved.
You always did.
Yes, but it was different then. In the force, you did your bit, put in a report, left it to the other people to decide what happened next. This wasn't like that. You see, I had Gerard marked down as a clever bastard who had it coming to him. When I met him, he was just a poor devil who had got caught up in something he couldn't handle. And I had to decide what was going to happen to him.
You couldn't have kept quiet, even without the fracas in the car park.
No. Especially as you rang the police.
It's just as well I did.
Yes.
You're really finishing?
Yes. The adulterers can sleep easy, if they want to.
They'll be dancing in the streets. I wrote to Ruth.
About this?
Your name's bound to appear in the press sooner or later.
Did you say anything about us?
No. I just said she could bring Mark for Christmas.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I've got to come home, haven't I? I couldn't get up and down those stairs to the office with this.
That's what I thought. Edgar, I still have a week's holiday left. What about going away for a few days?
Why not? How do you fancy Brighton?
What?
I've always liked Brighton.
The Brighton Trade was written for radio by T.D. Webster. Edgar Fenton was played by Manning Wilson, Joan Fenton by Zan Churchman, and Jimmy Marsden by Graham Weston. Stephen Yardley played Chief Inspector Wilmot, and Terry Malloy, Detective Sergeant Thomas. Sergeant Elliot was played by Jack Holloway, P.C. Buckley by Kenneth Hadley, and P.C. Cartwright by Les Miller. George Woolley played Dr. Holbrook and Cooper, and Angela Piper, Sylvia, and the shop assistant. Dennis was played by Simon Carter, and Dr. Gerard by Stephen Thorne. Surprised at you. Hello, hello. The play was produced in our Birmingham studios.